My guest today is Daryl Blood, returning to the show for a second time after a few years at a new album, Making All Things New. We're going to start by playing a track from that CD, and then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff, so stick around. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Changing facts, you see, now there's nothing left of me. Smoke and fire, smoke gets in your eyes. With mirrors tall as pines, I bought the rights to pay you no mind. Gonna put it in a lunchbox black, and I'm never gonna look back. Break me, cut me down to size. Departmentalize until we drown in our own disguise. Spare me, I know it won't be long until the cars go wrong, like I'm playing some northern song. Gonna put it in a lunchbox black, and I'm never gonna look back. Gonna put it in a lunchbox black, and I'm never gonna look back. Put it in a lunchbox black, and I'm never gonna look back. Gonna put it in a lunchbox black, and I'm never gonna look back. Never gonna look back. I know it won't be long. Never gonna look back. Never gonna look back.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Daryl Blood. Welcome back, Daryl.
Hello.
So you were a guest on this show in, I don't know, mid-2006, something like that. It was,
yeah,
I'm sure. I don't know, I'm just
right.
Just now coming to terms with the fact that we're halfway through 2008. I'm still processing Y2K and 9/11 and everything. It takes me forever.
Yeah.
So a lot's happened to you since then. Your roles have changed as a musician, as a family man. Tell me about what's been going on with you.
Well, I guess since that last time, I went back to school for recording. So I did that for about a year and a half, and in the meantime, I was recording this album, and that took me almost about 2 years, just bits and pieces on Pro Tools and just tons of friends helping out. And it's like a miracle that came together. I had so many people just doing stuff for free. And then a friend died, which was really devastating to me. But I guess sort of on the flip side, there's birth and then, well, there's death and then there's birth. And I had a son just last December. So now I'm a dad. So
congratulations.
Yeah, it's I mean, these past couple of years have been just crazy, like ups and downs, and just I can't even describe like what my life has been like. So I've been a little bit out of the picture.
not to betray, but I would imagine that these sort of extreme polarized emotional experiences have at least on one level been good for your songwriting skills. I mean, has that affected sort of your ability to, I don't know, lyricize the experience because you've, you know, really been going places emotionally?
Well, I definitely feel that this album has probably been, I mean, it's kind of a step from the last album, whereas the album before this was kind of thinking about moving to LA and all those feelings of leaving Boston behind. And then everything on this album really has been kind of what I've been going through in LA. But then, I guess it did kind of inform my writing as far as just the events that happened. And the death of my friend just really, really devastated me. And this album was something that we corresponded a lot about. And he had a sort of a psychotic, almost like dementia, and he was medicated for a while. And I'm not sure what the term of it was, but he was like hearing voices, and sort of near the end, he was just very heavily medicated. That, you know, I think he just kind of felt trapped by that, like he didn't feel like himself anymore.
It must have been a really painful experience to watch him go through, huh?
Well, yeah, and really hard because, I mean, this was back home in the East Coast. So, I wasn't in touch with them the last few months, you know, and I was actually home, and I felt bad because I hadn't even talked to him. And then just literally, you know, like a month later, he had committed suicide. And the title track actually... Well, the top track, the first track on the album, is called Chainsmoking Cathedral, and it was a song I had written, ironically, like it was actually very much about my friend McCann, and I didn't realize it until much later, but it was it's a song about sort of just kind of being, like, sort of imprisoned by depression, and this idea of, you know, should I trust doctors or medication, or, you know, can I just live with this mental illness, you know? And it was a song that he really identified with when he was writing me letters. So I always look back at those letters now, and it's just really prophetic, you know, just, you know, songs that he was like, yeah, you gotta get like that Oslo rocker on there. And, you know, like just all this encouraging words. Mm-hmm. And there's really, a grander picture to this too, because after he had died, he had left me an inheritance, which I had no, wow. I was blown away, which really, in my heart, I felt like he was telling me to keep going forward with the music, because I had no idea how I was going to, I really didn't put it out properly, but part of the money that he gave me went towards, you know, replicating and studio costs, and like it really helped push the album along, which I don't know how I would have done it. And it was sort of just this kind of gift from him. So the whole album is dedicated to him, and he was just a great songwriter and just a great friend, and he inspired a lot in me.
That's great that he was able to give that gift to you in the end to sort of help you get your album through and in that sort of indirect way. I mean,
yeah.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Is that the song you're referring to? Is that one you're going to play for us today, or are we going to listen to it on the album later?
I'd rather just play it, because, I mean, there's so much instrumentation. I don't know if just a solo guitar would do it, I guess. So maybe you can just hear the...
We'll play it later on from the CD then. For our audience sake, who may or may not already be familiar with what you do, kind of break it down for us. I mean, you're a solo artist, but, I mean, I've heard this album, and like you said, you've had a lot of people working with you for free. You know, how much of it is just the guy and his guitar versus, you know, the Daryl Blood experience, you know, the project?
This album was really, I mean, I consider it kind of a solo album, you know, as much as a, you know, just me writing everything and kind of thinking up what I'm going to do with it. And then I would have musicians along the way that were like really close friends that would just kind of like guest star and mm-hmm. just add flavors to it. But it does sound kind of, on the outside, it sounds like a band album. But the process itself was kind of really maddening, because, you know, you're just, it's all about hearing, you know, 24 tracks of just you, you know, like, and trying to fit in those times, like, okay, I've got 10 minutes, like, I'll put a shaker on, and, you know.
So a lot of the instruments are also you?
Yeah, I'd say, I guess, like, 90% of it. I mean, I had a drummer who played on all the tracks, and a bass player, and they sort of, they created the rhythm section, and then I just built everything from there. I did the pianos and the guitars and just little stuff. And I had, a friend of mine played some lap steel on it, and another friend did a really great, nice solo on a song called Lightning and Stones. And just kind of, whoever, just kind of having friends helping along the way, and I was trying to, and then I'd have my friend Jeffrey, who produced it, he would give input, and he'd be like, oh, maybe we should have a harpsichord here, or he'd be sort of like the producer of it, or he'd be like, I've got these harmonies, I'm going to track them, and then I'll send them to you. And
oh, cool.
So we did a lot of back and forth through the mail, intranet, sending waves.
Postal service style.
Yeah, just because you can, and it makes sense. And so it did have a really nice eclectic out of my body kind of experience, because it was not completely me. And I really liked that it was shaped by all these friends and people I know. And I just felt like McCann sort of had his arms around the whole thing, So it, to me, is a really just great, album experience in that respect. But then there's other, there's a lot of really meticulous, nitpicky stuff that I can't stand. You're just sitting there, looking at waves and editing,
I do that with these very interviews. When we're done, I'll be going home and I'll be...
you don't get a break from it.
Absolutely. But, when you get it right, and I was having this conversation with another guest on the show recently, how, when you say, oh, I really like this song, what you're referring to is the song, the way it was recorded that day on that album by that band at that time, which is not the same thing as really liking the song. The song exists both, as a function of that recording and independently from that recording, and it may sound different at every live show. It may sound different with another person performing it, the remix or whatever, So in the recording process for a lot of artists, it's... it can be really nerve-wracking, because you're not just trying to get the song perfect. You're trying to get the song, immortalized. Because when you're done, that's the song. Whatever happens with it, no matter how many times you play it, when people refer to liking the song, chances are they're going to be referring to that recording of the song.
Right. And that's sort of like your only impression. If you kind of blow that first impression, people may not get it.
You won't get the chance to say, oh, but you have to hear it live.
I really gotta just get this song.
Yeah.
I mean, well,
speaking of live, why don't we jump into a live song before we...
Okay.
What would you like to play for us first?
I'm gonna play, let me see. I guess I gotta think now. I'm gonna play a new one. It's a new song I've been working out with this full band that we've had going for a little while. So let me just put my cable on here, make sure I'm in tune.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Daryl Blood, whenever you're ready.
Okay, this one's called Go to Pieces. Touched by this black hand, you've got to understand, it's part of the plan. You can't expect to know the weight of the sky, the color of snow. Don't let it get you down, go to pieces. Anybody knows where this thing can. Tears well up, but don't look back, don't let those feelings last.
shine. Open your mind. Don't run and hide.
Listening to Is Good. My guest is Daryl Blood. Fantastic, man. What usually comes for you first? Is it the music or the lyrics?
Usually the music. I think as I'm playing, I usually just kind of sing stuff as a melody and whatever comes into my head. So sometimes those inform where the song's gonna go. Or I might have a chorus, and that would open up, like, the story. You know, like, oh, yeah, it's about this guy, and, you know, he's running around naked, and, oh, okay, you know. So, you know, then you can sort of backtrack, and then once you have the story, you know, you can just write the rest of the chapters, you know.
Nakedness aside, is there a theme that you come back to a lot in your music? You know, do you find yourself, even when you're telling a story about, you know, other people or something, is there... I don't know, certain subjects or topics or, you know, areas of thought that you like to delve into?
I have a lot of recurring themes. But I don't know, I guess as the years kind of wear on, I'm trying to be more positive about what I write about, because I think there was... It is a time that I don't know. I think you can get really caught up in the negativity or the things that aren't working instead of sort of what is working. But then sometimes I kind of like to play the devil's advocate. You know, I'll leave it kind of open-ended. I like to almost maybe give a side to the story that isn't perfect, but give it a little... trapdoor, you know, mm-hmm. in case, you know, you can find a way out. So I don't know. I guess sometimes I just write what comes to me, and sometimes it can be, the stuff I've been writing lately is the newer songs with the band. They're definitely sounding like they kind of all go together. And I'm actually trying not to be as, I guess, whimsical or metaphorical. I'm trying to be really straightforward about what I'm saying. And I guess maybe because, you know, I have a son now, and I'm thinking about, you know, this world, and, you know, maybe there's a sense of morality that's starting to creep into my songs. You know?
Oh, interesting, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's the right answer.
Oh, I don't think there is a right answer to that question. What about musically? I mean, since you're now aware that there are certain people that you can rely on to play with you in your band and the live act, do you do you write now, thinking about what these other people are going to do with your notes?
Yes, and it's actually ironically when I made this album, I always call it this album because I feel like it's been on my back for like 3 years now or so. Leading up to the show where I was going to like fully play it out, it was December 1st, and I assembled about 8 people to be in the band, just sort of like get the sound of it. And to me, it was like a funeral. It was sort of almost like I had kind of in a weird way. I don't know if that's the right word for it. That might be too brutal, but it was, I was closing a chapter, I thought. And I decided that, yeah, you know, I want to finish this chapter and realize it live. And that's it. I'm just going to give it away. I was going to put my music on the shelf because I was like, I'm a dad. I can't do this anymore. It's really hard to get people begging for favors and everything. But out of that show, I mean, I found like these 3 amazing people that were like, no, we have to keep this going. And it's then I started thinking, wow, all right, well, maybe this is really going to be a band. And I haven't been in a band for almost 10 years now. I've always just been, you know, beg, borrow, and steal everything I do solo-wise.
Right.
You know? So now, yeah, it's when I write songs, I'm like, all right, well, let's try to, you know, I'm trying to write a lot more up-tempo or more rocker songs. Like, I want to just, like, have fun. It's like, it's a lot of the...
And give something for your bandmates to
enjoy.
To fool around with, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, a lot of the new songs are really just, like, straight-up rockers, you know, and that's why some of them are just kind of just straight up lyrics.
This theme of like things coming to an end and also representing new beginnings at the same time. I mean, this seems to be happening to you on a more or less regular basis then.
Well, it was surprising to me because I really didn't think it would turn out this way, and I didn't think I could keep it going. And then when that's what happens when you're in a band, you realize that you really are really lucky to have 3 people or more, you know, that have your back, you know. And then for me, it almost like relaxes my, you know, like I feel like a weight's lifted because all these other people are now helping to keep it pushing, you know, pushing it, promoting it, telling people about it, and just excited to play. And I feel not, you know, I just feel grateful that people want to play with me.
Yeah.
And
they
enjoy...
want the song to be good. They should be, anyway, as devoted to your music as to you as the leader of the band, you know.
Yeah, and there's a certain democracy and respect, and everyone respects their own parts and the way that they approach each song. And it's really nice to just be like, oh, yeah, I like that part. Or what do you think? What should I do here? You know, it's a dissertation that happens at... You can't do that by yourself, like in front of a mirror, like, you know.
Yeah. Although I imagine
what should I do
people
here?
Do. let's listen to another track from this album. Where can people get this, by the way?
Okay, well, that's a long story, but basically you can't. It's really... Well, you can get it on iTunes. You can download it. Mm-hmm. You can buy it there. Or if you see me at a show, you can buy them. But yeah. They're really... I just kind of hand make them, so they're kind of almost like one-offs. I mean, they're all printed, you know, I do, you know.
Right, but you didn't make such a huge, like, warehouse of bulk that you would be shipping them to all the stores and everything.
Exactly, so this
and
is
that's
all
the, you know, that's
hand-selling.
Gonna, yeah, people aren't going to be doing that for much longer anyway.
Yeah, that's
you know?
What I thought. It's like, it's a digital age. And.
But it is nice to have the CD in hand, you know?
Yeah.
With the spine and the cover art and everything. Yeah. What should we play?
How about, well, I guess we were talking about Chainsmoke
okay.
Cathedral. Let's do that. And it's, gives us some time to, have a snack.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Daryl Blood. Stick around. We'll be right back.
There's apples in my heart, and all the while I've been waiting, and it's tearing me apart. I knew I should have known to never tell no one, and It's everything that's been killing me, but just some chemicals gone bad. Doctor took me in. He said, "You've been a bad son. You can hardly climb that mountain, just running from everyone. So take a few steps back and measure up your life. I can try and ease your troubles, but I can't your past. Can you believe this time I want to try? So I looked him in the eye and he scribbled down some notes. The chair was cold and heavy. There was in my throat. He said, tell me how it happened. How long has it been? Well, I haven't felt happy in a long time, and I'm frightened by the state I'm in. I'm sick of feeling nothing when nothing's going wrong. And I'm sitting here like some stranger, just staring at the wall. Can you believe this time I want to try? Can you believe this time I don't wanna die? But the doctor wasn't in. So the nurse gave me a blanket and she kissed me on the chin. She said that fears are like comets, just floating above our eyes. And ignorance is a parachute if you're reading between the lines. Chain-smoking cathedral, I'm a stretched-out rubber band, and my music is my salvation. This much I understand. Can you believe this time I want to try? I don't wanna die. I don't wanna die.
And we're back on Is Good, hanging out with Daryl Blood. That was the song Chainsmoking Cathedral, the first track off of his album Making All Things New, which you can download from iTunes, or you can go to one of his shows and get a copy of the CD. Speaking of shows, Before you found these guys to play with, were you doing mostly like solo acoustic coffee shop kind of things?
Yeah, pretty much. And then, you know, once in a while I'd kind of scrape a band together, but that usually wasn't ideal. You know, it was always like ramshackle. And so, yeah, I probably did a lot of solo shows, but over the past couple of years, I haven't done many because I was in school and recording this album, and I just kind of took the breaks on playing shows, really. But yeah, I guess it was probably more solo than full band.
Now, you've been making music for a long time under different names, different kinds of projects, and have throughout this sort of evolution of your music, have you kind of figured out what a really good live show is for you, like what criteria you use to determine whether or not it was good?
Well, I think I'm beginning to get closer to that, I think, because I'm thinking about it more because now we have a band. I have a band that we all are trying to get a consistent sound. And that was kind of the problem once I left Boston and I wasn't playing with regular people. Everything was disconnected all the time. You never could get any kind of consistency. So I feel like I'm on the road to figuring that out. And but yeah, we kind of feel like we have at least one set's worth of songs, and then there's, you know, these other songs that are floating around that we can kind of throw in. But yeah, we kind of feel like we have like a nice tight set, and it's, you know, only going to get better as we kind of juice it up and beef up the sound. And yeah, it's much closer than it's been in over a decade, I think.
So do you base it more on your the assessment of the quality of your performance versus what the audience reaction was, or how good the sound was at the particular venue, or those other kinds of things that factor into what a live show is?
Yeah, I mean, when I was solo for a while, a good show to me would basically be, did I forget any lyrics? Did I, did I crack? Did my voice crack at any point? Was the sound good?
Did I bite the head off a bat at any point in the show?
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. I think I kind of realized after a while that I never felt that comfortable as a solo performer. I didn't really felt like I don't know if I wasn't engaging enough, or I just wasn't electric enough, or I don't feel comfortable as a solo performer as much as being in a band. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel now, I remember now being in a band again, which it's a great feeling because now I don't feel as inhibited by sort of just this one sound, you know, and there's so much other things going on. I really like hearing arrangements and a full sound. And I always just felt when I was solo, it was just like this, to me, as like this, you know, a poor excuse for like what I was trying to achieve, because that's all I could do was just pick up a guitar, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like, you know, I could just, you know, rock off all these songs with like Annie DeFranco and or whatever, you know. I wasn't like a coffee house kind of guy, so I never really thought they translated that well. They just seemed like rock songs but on an acoustic guitar. Or
so it was like you were breaking down what the music should have been just so that you had a way to present it, you know, but you weren't really, showing the songs the way they were meant to be.
Yeah, and I think that showed. I think it showed that I wasn't that confident about it, and it just didn't. I don't think it. Sometimes it translated, sometimes it didn't. I don't know. And I think maybe it, you can feel it from the audience. But it wasn't as, I guess, for me personally, it wasn't as fulfilling, you know. But I don't know, but it's interesting because now that I've been in a band for a little while, we've only been playing for, you know, about 4 months. I've done a few little solo shows, and it's incredible now how different I feel about playing solo.
You feel better about it?
I feel way more confident.
Because it's refreshing and a little bit different.
Yeah.
You have that kind of...
Yeah, it was like a nice little break, you know.
And you know it's not the only thing that you're going to be doing.
Yeah, because I feel like, oh, okay, well, you know, when this is over, I still have my band.
Yeah,
know?
That's cool. So, well, on that note, why don't we, if I could force you to play a solo acoustic song for me.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. I'm okay doing this.
Yeah, you know? Cool. What are you gonna shoot out for us here?
Well, I guess there's not many songs on the album, I think, that are I mean, there's a few that sound nice solo, and so I'm going to just do one of those. It's called, it's off the CD, and it's called And This Deepest Blue.
All right, whenever you're ready. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Daryl Blood.
I am trying hard to spill all my guts across a wheel that is spinning in my head. Hope there's nothing left, 'cause I'm sitting in this chair drinking sonnets and Baudelaire. Please don't flake this lullaby. If you're fishing for advice, I'll be dreaming of you twice. 'Cause I love you, it's all I wanna do. Yes, I love you, so endless, deepest blue. Many stones have fell deep inside our little well, in a garden we have grown. Many years from home, all my troubles once were hills, but you've crushed them very still, and the mountains have grown eyes. You're always my best surprise as we sleep by candlelight. 'Cause I love you, it's all I wanna do. Yes, I love you, so endless, deepest blue. Troubles every day, and the mountains have grown eyes. Hope you know my size. Though the sun and moon could shine, the whole sky could rain down wine, but it's obvious to me just how beautiful and free my whole life with you. I love you, it's all I wanna do. Yes, I love you, so endless, deepest blue. So endless, deepest blue.
What came for you first? Was it playing an instrument or singing?
Probably playing an instrument.
So were you?
I still don't know how to sing, so I don't know. That's not. But.
So was you were kind of playing guitar for a while, and you started writing songs. And then you're like, well, now I have to sing, and you just kind of gave it a shot. And.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, I guess I've always been writing songs and trying to learn how to write songs, so I just have hours of four tracks of just really kind of, I mean, I had the, you know, crappy phases where I'd be doing like the Depeche Mode / Cure songs, then they start, and then, you know, the early 90s it starts phasing into like the Robin Hitchcock songs, and then eventually I drop the faux English accent, and I really stick for those American songs, you know.
So you were modeling the sounds of people you were influenced by at the time.
Yeah, since I was about 8, all I listened to was like the Beatles, and a lot of the like Brit rock, and I still do. I love 60s, 70s, like, freedom rock, whatever you want to call it, classic rock. I guess it's kind of backwards, because I was always just writing songs, and I eventually just fell into a band with a friend of mine, and it kind of, I wasn't really singing in it, I was just really just playing guitar. I was kind of emulating that kind of Sonic Youth-y kind of noise guitar stuff, and it was really kind of a weird, kind of eclectic sound band. And then eventually I just started kind of screaming vocals in the background. It's very 90s, and then after that was over, I started thinking more again about just writing songs again, and just thinking I want to do that, you know. And that's when I started doing Tiltmaster, which was kind of like just my 4-track stuff. Now I'm putting it out there. And then eventually I was like, after a few years of that, I was like, I think I should just call myself, you know, Daryl Blood. I'm not really a band. So I think it was like an evolving thing. So, you know, from like 97 to about now, I think I've been learning how to really write the kind of songs I've been wanting to write. And this last album, I think I've been, I just feel like I get a little bit better, you know, every few years, you know. So it's...
What do you think is, do you think you can pinpoint, like, you were referring to, like, music of the 60s and the Beatles as music that, you know, really resonates with you. Mm-hmm. What do you think is lacking in terms of modern indie music that's failing to capture that quality that you're hoping to capture in your music?
I don't know. I mean, I guess music and art are just very subjective, so it's really hard to really say why it works and why it doesn't work, you know. I think it's existed all through music. I mean, maybe there could be bands that are more interested in the pastiche or the look or the image, and that might be taking over the songwriting. Maybe they're just really trying to go for like a sound and like almost like a copycat kind of sound, and maybe that's, when you strip that all away, like if you stripped away, like, She Wants Revenge on an acoustic guitar, is there really a song there? You know, I mean, it's kind of like maybe production over maybe just like the singer songwriter of, you know, even like the 70s, you know, like Jim Croce or, you know, or Harry Nilsson. You base a song off of writing a song just on a guitar, and then you kind of embellish it without completely burying it in production, you know. I mean, you know, Dylan was a huge, I think Dylan and Lennon, especially Lennon in the later years, were really not concerned about how they accomplished recording the song. They were just more like, just get the song down. It's more important. Like, the song will come through, you know, like
people. So you're saying now, like, production is being prioritized over songwriting.
It might be.
Some songs do sound like they're produced before they were written.
Yeah, but I don't think that's always the case. But I mean, I think it's like anything. I think there's so many styles and influences to pull from. I think it's exciting, but maybe some people are still getting a little lost in it. You know, it just takes them a little while to find themselves where they want to go with it, and especially the record industry that promotes bands that like hardly ever played live shows, and suddenly they're on tour and they're trying to find themselves, their sound or whatever. So that must probably be really frightening for them.
It must be kind of weird actually to think that you're trying to find yourself in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah. You know,
that's usually, you find yourself in front of 3 people at a, you know, an art gallery, and then, you know, you build your way up. But
yeah,
so let's go back to the album for a few minutes. What should we have a listen to?
Oh, let me see that again. Blanking out here. Why don't we go for another rocker, Oslo. And I don't know what track that is. It's like 8 or 9. I can't count.
Yeah, I think it's 8. Down there. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Daryl Blood. We'll be right back.
There's blood on the tracks, halfway from Camden and Oslo. There's enough on my mind, white noise and plenty of tremolo. 'Cause I wanna be someone, but I'm looking to no one but you. Out the door, and keep running. 'Cause I'm looking for something. I'm asking for nothing.
Back on Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with Daryl Blood and doing one of my favorite things to do on this show, which is trash talk the Sunset Strip. So no, we were talking about venues and going out and the whole absurdity of, you know, draw expectations. And, you know, it's understood venues need to make money, and you know, the right band should be booked at the right venue at the right time.
Right.
But at the same time, there is this thing called pay for play that exists, and usually it's reserved for preying on touring bands that don't know any better, you know. But every once in a while, a local band finds themselves caught in the bear trap of I'm trying to get a good gig. So you had a funny story. I thought it was worth being on the air.
Sure. Well, I guess I don't know if I don't know if I should say the name of this band. So in case he doesn't want to get into a lawsuit, but I was playing in a friend's band. I was just filling in, so like a noise electronica band, and we were booked on a Monday night at midnight. And even when he had booked the show, he kind of gave me this long thing like, yeah, you know, they contacted me or something. Somehow someone contacted him and said, hey, do you want to play? Or I don't know what it was. And maybe he contacted them or as a friend referred him or something. And then they were like, oh, well, you know, we're pay to play, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I don't want to pay to play, but if you have a slot open, you know, and you want me to play, great. And it's like, okay, no thanks. And, you know, a few weeks go by, and I think this happens a couple of times. And then at one point, they finally say, you know, we're going to give you a shot, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think he just took it as that and was like, okay, great. You know, and so we get this show and we're there, we load it in, you know, we're it's kind of funny because like some friends of his had come with like video cameras and they're like, this is where Jim Morrison sat. They're all freaked out like, oh, you know, did he touch this wall? And they're feeling like there's some ghosts everywhere. And so we're just like kind of just having fun in the green room. And and then we kind of get this guy like about a half an hour before we come on. And he just has this look. And I just was like, what? I just felt like we're going to the principal's office, you know? And he's like, you know, the booker would like to speak to you in the box office.
The
and,
booker.
Yeah. And we're like, oh,
dun, 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 dun.
It's crazy. I was like, what? And so she kind of went in to him, my friend who had booked the show, and just went on this huge tirade about, well, you know, you didn't bring enough people and you only brought a few and they were on the guest list. So you basically didn't bring anyone. And this was your shot, and you know, you were, you know, I think it's in your best interest and our best interest to not embarrass yourself in the club. And you know, we have a reputation, and like, you don't want this to be your first show here. And we're sort of like, we don't care. We're just here to play a show, and
at midnight on
a
Monday,
we're here. We're gonna give it a shot. Like, we'll do it, you know. But she's like, no, you don't want to. And then all this, you know, and then it just became this, you know, locked heads things. And it's like, all right, you know, and then we just had to leave. It was
wow.
Ridiculous. And then the band before us too also got booted. So they booted two bands from the night. And I think really what it came down to is that they wanted to close early. So, you know, X amount of hours means more money. They got to pay the bar or pay their
staff.
Keep
the lights on.
Which, you know, whatever, I guess I get that, but it was like, I don't know. It's don't ask us to play here. I mean, in expecting anything, when you know it's a Monday night at midnight, and I think it was kind of I think it was very last minute, too, when he actually got the show confirmed, when she said, yeah, you can do it, like someone canceled or something.
I think it's amazing how venues in L.A., so, and not all venues, of course, but I mean, so many of them so frequently blame musicians for
not promoting,
for not doing the work that is the job of the venue to do. It's like you're a restaurant, you're a bar, you're a club. It's your job to convince people that they should be your customers. Entertainment is one way you do that, by booking good bands, but it's not the band's responsibility to deliver your customers.
And not to mention, the band is what is going to keep that bar or whatever alive. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like you kind of rely on that band, I guess, to bring people. But at the same point, it's kind of like, if they don't, well, where's your backup? You know, like, do you completely rely on this band to, like, completely fill this place? And, you know, with the parking issues and, you know, all this stuff. And a Monday night on a, you know, it's like...
Well, I'm sure that venue has a reputation as a result of that. And maybe it's not the reputation they think they have, but, you know, bands know. I mean, there is a blacklist of sorts, I think, you know, within the indie community. They know where not to play anymore because of that kind of nonsense, because it's work. Just going down there and unloading your gear and everything like that it's not just for playing. I mean, there's the work that you do to even physically make yourself show up there, and that's got to count for at least a couple
Something.
Of people, right?
Yeah.
You got to get some credit for that. Well, all right, I'll climb down off this horse long enough to finish our interview. Why don't we play another live song if you're up for it?
Okay. This next one's called Lightning and Stones, and it's also off the CD, but here it goes.
Knocking at my door. If I ever stray, just give me some sense. There's too much I already know, and I'm halfway to home with a love all my. And so many times I think how I almost let you go. But where would I stand without my dearest friend? You're the moon that follows my soul.
I don't know if you can hear the sirens in the background, but they came in so beautifully at the end of that song. It's such an emotional, it's such a beautiful song. It really is. And it was great. I was just sort of like, as the guitar faded out, you hear it in the background. It's like, woo, 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 boo, boo, boo. I don't know if that carried through on the stream, but regular listeners of the show know that the Kill Radio studio is actually located on the median strip of a freeway. So yeah. That was fantastic.
And those sandwich boards, they really have really good isolation. I'm really surprised, but it must be I don't know. It could be the height of the D'Angelo's opposed to the subway signs. Or
could be. MySpace.com/DarylBlood.
Yes.
Is there any? Is that the place to go for the most up to date info on what you're doing?
Yeah. That's just basically any of the solo stuff I've been doing. And very soon, we'll be starting a new page to reflect the new band, and because we're actually calling it a band, we're sort of in transition of figuring out that name.
Is it going to be Daryl Blood and something, or no, the somethings, or?
Yeah, I thought about this for a while, and I really came to the conclusion that this really is a band, and I just don't want to give the impression that this is like my side band, like they're backing me up, mm-hmm. They're just kind of indispensable or dispensable, I guess I should have said dispensable.
Expendable.
Expendable. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. So eventually there is going to be sort of like a separate thing, but you can always link it from me. But that's,
do you see yourself though maintaining the lion's share of the songwriting, or are you going to even make it a more collaborative process as the band kind of grows together?
I think it just really depends. I basically bring in like the songs, or the sketches, and we pretty much, flesh them out as a band. So I feel without the band, they wouldn't be the same. I could obviously play these solo, but they wouldn't. I mean, to me, they're songs I'm consciously writing for a full band, so I think they don't really hold up that much, I guess. But I guess they could. But I really consider it between all of us, it now becomes a song, whereas before it was just me in a bedroom playing.
Where are you guys playing next?
We're playing at the I guess they call it Third Street Jazz, but the booking night is called the Cocaine.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah. And
I think it's Second Street. Actually.
Second Street. Yeah. Right. Second Street. You're right. So that's on.
That's actually a really cool place, isn't it? That's like in Little Tokyo, isn't it? Or downtown area?
That's where I had my CD, or if you want to call it a CD release, but that's where I last played. And I played there a few times. It's really nice.
Isn't it like doubles as a Japanese restaurant and an indie rock venue at the same time?
Yeah, it's like, it's a jazz club, so they have jazz stuff there, and they have this really nice baby grand that's on the stage all times. It's like fully tuned.
Right, right.
They have sushi, and then they have drinks, and kind of like what we were talking about earlier, but on the flip side, like, no bullshit. I mean, they don't ever give you crap about who did you bring. And it's actually a really good insulated kind of crowd that comes. People usually come out for that night. So it's usually pretty well attended every time I played there. And it's
nice.
Between all the bands. So
that's where you're playing next, May?
May 24th at the Cocaine. And you can see that they have a webpage on MySpace too, just MySpace/TheCocaine. So that's the next one. The full band one, it'll be kind of like our second show as this new formed band.
Cool.
So it'll be good.
Well, do you want to do one more live song before we call it a day?
Sure. Another kind of rocker song. I hope it translates.
All right, cool. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Daryl Blood, whenever you're ready.
And thanks again, John, for having me on this.
My pleasure, man.
I figured out what I really want to say. But when I think of leaving you, I feel okay. And everybody's saying that we just can't make it. Feels like such a waste. Saying that there's nothing left to say. I think we've played it out. It just don't pay. And everybody's saying that we just can't make it. It feels like such a waste.
Daryl, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest was Daryl Blood, myspace.com/DarrylBlood, myspace.com/Daryl Blood. His new album is Making All Things New. Check it out. This episode will be available for download from myspace.com/thisisgood. It'll also be podcasted on iTunes. You can get the subscription link there on the MySpace page. And it will also be integrated into Daryl's profile on the new isgoodmusic.com beta website. Check it out. You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Living in a blank unknown, a life I thought was my own. Wish I could bury these feelings in a hole. Searching for the land I know, waiting for the gray white hole. Feel like a campaign junkie on the dole. Knowing all I know, knowing all I know. Probably won't wanna go. Listening to blank cassettes, heading down the dead sunset. There's a sense of loss I'm beginning to forget. As vacant as the eye can see, denizens inside of me. Comfortable pain I'm willing. Won't wanna go. Don't come to cover. because I probably won't want to go. I don't count the curvature road, 'cause I probably